Reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mali Lila, Chapter 5, entitled The Activities of Sakshi Gopal. Gopal Raina Duhi Karina Sevanena Dekite Aila Shabe Deshire Lokajana. Lord Gopal stayed, and the two Brahmanas engaged in his service. After hearing of the incident, many people from different countries began to come to see Gopal. He was speaking about the Gopal deity that walked across India as a witness for a younger Brahmana who had served this elderly Brahmana nicely in Vrindavan. But anyway, later on, that Brahmana denied the promises that he had made in Vrindavan, because he had promised in Vrindavan that he would marry his daughter to this younger Brahmana, and that did not meet with agreement of his family. And as a result, his family made a whole drama. You know, his wife said she would commit suicide, his eldest son was like totally obnoxious. So in the end, the Brahmana said, but what can I do? I gave my word. His son said, just say you can't remember, I'll do the rest. So like that, the elderly Brahmana, just to save, you know, his wife, I mean, the situation looked serious, so what to do? Yes, I can't remember. Then the son said, yes, this rascal is claiming that my father promised marry my sister, this, that. It's all a lie. Anyway, in the end, they had a witness, the deity Gopal. So the deity came as a witness, and it is that deity that became very famous. At the end, the two Brahmanas, the elderly and the younger Brahmana, became the servants of the deity. And they were the Pujaris. So it continued like that. Then, so this is approximately where we are in the story. Se deshre raja aila aschara shanina parama santosha paila gopila dekina. Eventually, the king of that country heard this wonderful story, and he also came to see Gopal, and thus became very satisfied. Mandir Korea Raja Seva Chalaila Shakshi Gopal Bale Tale Nama Kite Vaila. The king constructed a nice temple, and regular service was executed. Gopal became very famous under the name of Shakshi Gopal, the witness Gopal. E Mate Vijanagare Shakshi Gopal Shivangikara Kore Achena Chitraka. Thus Sakshi Gopal stayed in Vijayanagara and accepted service for a very long time. The city of Vijayanagara is situated in the Trilingadesh, South India, on the bank of the river Godavari. The place where the Godavari flows into the Bay of Bengal is called Kotadesh. The Orissa kingdom was very powerful, and Kotadesh was the capital of Orissa. It was then known as Vijayanagara. Formerly, the city was situated on the southern side of the river Godavari. At that time, King Purushottam Dev managed to control Orissa and appoint a government. The present city of Vijayanagara is on the southeast side of the river, only 25 miles from Rajmundry. During the time of Maharaj Prataparuda, Srinam Brahmananda Roy was the governor there. Vijayanagara was not identical with Vijayanagara. Sometimes we find these purports in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where very detailed descriptions are given of where a place is located and so on, and it's quite clear that there's an invitation. I mean, sort of a hint from possibly, maybe you want to go. And it would be very auspicious to go, undoubtedly, to visit all these places and to commemorate these various pastimes. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself commemorated these pastimes. He went there to these places. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he made a tour of South India, visiting many, many deities, many famous temples. So traditionally, this is what devotees do. What do you do when you're a devotee? It's not about what don't you do. There are four regulative principles. What do you do? Right? And then it's like, so one of the things to do is to go on pilgrimages. That is what devotees do, to visit holy places. And in these holy places, to remember the pastimes, to pray to the deities, all these kind of things is like what one does, and to render some service. So we see that originally this deity was in Vijayanagara. Utkalera Raja Purushottam Devanam Sedesa Jini Mila Korya Shangram. Later there was a fight, and this country was conquered by King Purushottam Dev of Orissa. Se Raja Jini Mila Tara Shimashane Manikya Shimashane Name Aneke Ratam. That king was victorious over the king of Vijayanagara, and he took possession of his throne, the Manikya Simhasan, which was bedecked with many jewels. Purushottam Dev Shebada Bhaktarya Gopal Charane Marge Chare More Raja. King Purushottam Dev was a great devotee and was advanced in the civilization of the Aryans. He begged at the lotus feet of Gopal, "Please come to my kingdom." Tara bhakti vase gopal tare abhyadila gopalayase katakaila. When the king begged him to come to his kingdom, Gopal, who was already obliged for his devotional service, accepted his prayer. Thus the king took the Gopal deity and went back to Katak. Jagannathai dila manikya simasane Kattako Palasheva Korilash Tapane. After winning the Manikya throne, King Purushottam Dev took it to Jagannath Puri and presented it to Lord Jagannath. In the meantime, he also established regular worship of the Gopal deity at Katak. When the Gopal deity was installed at Katak, the queen of Purushottam Dev went to see him, and with great devotion presented various kinds of ornaments. Tahana sete bahumulya muktahaya tadite chahoya manitas chintaya. The queen had a very valuable pearl which she wore on her nose, and she wished to give it to Gopal. She then began to think as follows. Takir takurera nasate jodi chidra tukshita Tabe. If there were a hole in the deity's nose, I could transfer the pearl to him. Considering this, the queen offered her obeisances to Gopal and returned to her palace. That night she dreamt that Gopal appeared and spoke to her as follows. Balya kale matamore nasa chidrakari muktapare nachila bahuyat nakari. During my childhood, my mother made a hole in my nose and with great endeavor set a pearl there. Sei chidra chapiya cha nashate she muktapara hajaha chaya chidite. That very hole is still there and you can use it to set the pearl you desire to give to me. Swapna dehi seirani Raja ki kahila, Raja sai muktalaya mandire. Aida, after dreaming this, the queen explained it to her husband, the king. Both the king and the queen then went into the temple with the pearl. Pataila muktana se achidra dekina maha mahatsa koila anandita haya. Seeing the hole in the nose of the deity, they set the pearl there and being very pleased held a great festival. Say hi to Gopalera Kataksthite Elaga Shakshi Gopa Namahelakyate. Since then, Gopa has been situated in the city of Katak, and he has been known ever since as Sakshi Gopa.
Nityanamukishane Gopala Charita Justaira Mahaprabhu Swabhakta Sahita.
Thus Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard the narration of Gopal's activities. Both he and his personal associates became very pleased. So you heard actually from the mouth of Lord Nityananda.
Gopalirage jale prabhur hishtite bhaktagana deke jena dune kamute.
When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was sitting before the Gopal deities, all the devotees saw him and the deity as being of the same form.
Dunne kavane dunne prakande sharira dunne raktambare dunne swabhava gambira.
They were of the same complexion and both had gigantic bodies. Both wore saffron clothes and both were very brave.
Mahateja mahadunya kamalanayan dunne bhava vese dunne chandravadan.
The devotees saw that both Lord Chaitanya and Gopal were brilliantly effulgent and had eyes like lotuses. They were both absorbed in ecstasy and both their faces resembled full moons.
Dunna dekhi nityananda prabhu maharange taratari kare hase bhakta ganasanne.
When Nityananda, you have to do something. When Nityananda saw the Gopal deity and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in that way, he began to exchange remarks with the devotees, all of whom were smiling.
Imate mahasanga sirati vanchiya pravati chalila manga arite dekina.
Thus with great pleasure, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passed that night in the temple. After seeing the Mangal Arati ceremony in the morning, he started on his journey.
Bhubaneswar patyache kaila darshane vistare vaniyache dasa vindavane.
In his book Chaitanya Bhagavat, Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur has very vividly described the places visited by the Lord on the way to Bhubaneswar. So in this way we see how pilgrimages that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are described. Well, of course when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to such places, it wasn't an ordinary pilgrimage, rather he was making those places even more sacred than they were before. Just by the presence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all those places became surcharged with so much more transcendental energy. So that is another matter. Just like it is described in the CC that when Lord Jagannath was coming out to Rath Yatra, all the devotees were waiting and waiting, because it's in Jagannath Puri since a long, long time. Rath Yatra, you never know when it starts. So all the devotees are just waiting and waiting and waiting in front of the temple. And there's no fixed time. There's no such thing as that it starts at a certain time. And they, because they know if they fix the time, they're going to run late. So they just don't fix the time. And it's easy. Then there's no headache, no anxiety. And suddenly the doors open. Devotees wait the whole day until the doors open, and then it starts, and the deities are coming out, and so on. But exactly when, nobody knows. It can happen any time. Anyway, so all the devotees were waiting for Lord Jagannath to appear. But when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there, it was Lord Jagannath who was waiting eagerly to have the darshan of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in this way we understand that when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited these places, it was not just another pilgrimage. Of course, in this Sakshi Gopal temple, they also have restrictions now for foreign devotees. They will not let them in. But one can see the deity from outside, right? The darshan, one can see. And if one is from Indian descent, then one can go inside. But still, all these places are our legacy. And the fact that that Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami has described this deity so much, it is obviously a very important story for us. The story of Sakshi Gopal, who walked across India, and who has been greatly worshipped by kings and so on. Just to make it very clear that it was not just some sort of rumor. You should understand the deity, the fact that this is all described, how the king and the queen were worshipping this deity, is really to reconfirm that Gopal really walked across India, and that deities are really not made of stone, and that deities are actually really Krishna, and that Krishna is very merciful like that, and that just being on the altar and offering some incense is really not nonsense, but rather that it is direct activity in the spiritual world, because when Krishna comes, he brings the spiritual world with him, and being on the altar, therefore, is like being in Vrindavan. So it's quite cheap in that way. Saves the flight. And it's no different from Vrindavan. And any service rendered in Vrindavan is the essence of our whole visit to Vrindavan, because why else would we go to Vrindavan if we're not going there to serve Krishna? If we're just going there for ourselves, thinking, oh, what will I get? What inspiration will I get in Vrindavan? Then our understanding is poor. Then we are a poor man, a beggar. A beggar is always thinking, what will I get? What will I get? But we are meant to give. What can I give? What service can I offer the Lord? That is Vrindavan. It is about the service that we render. Therefore, going on the altar is a perfect way to go to Vrindavan. And it's simple. Offer some incense, offer a lamp and everything, or offer a pearl. And who knows, one might find that in the nose of the Lord there is a forgotten hole which they made in his childhood, like this. So we also see that this Vaishnav king Purushottam Dev conquered that neighboring kingdom. But that really then he served the deity very nicely. So such things were also there, even amongst Vaishnavas sometimes. Some fights were also there. to get absorbed. In Krishna consciousness is not just a matter of being on automatic pilot. Sometimes we are really too much on automatic pilot. We feel like, well, I'm chanting my 16 rounds, so that should suffice, isn't it? No, it's like so much is done. So much is done by all these great devotees to go deeper in their relationship with Krishna. So that is also there for us. So many offerings to be made to the Lord. Of course, one can offer a pearl, or one can offer a Sankirtan festival. That is fine. One can offer many things, but offerings are to be made. That is really our relationship with the Lord, to make many, many offerings in different ways. And if we do so, then we'll make so much advancement. It's like in our movement, we also have deities that have been served for a longer period of time, and with it also a history, naturally. And I'm thinking of France. France was after Srila Prabhupada, or even during the time of Srila Prabhupada, it was under the care of Bhagavan Das, who was the disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And he was a very dynamic personality and managed to get big castles for the deities. And he installed big deities. But at the same time, he was a young man and he took sannyas at a young age, and that's not always easy. So over time, he had difficulties with his sannyas. Then, as a result, he gave up his vows and so on, and people lost faith. And when people lost faith, then the service went down. And everyone basically gave up their selfless attitude of service and started to and just withdrew from that service and started to take care of their own life. So some were thinking that, well, it was becoming more and more difficult to maintain the service to the deities, because there were not so many devotees to serve the deities. And some thought that the deities really are a problem for us. The deities are the problem.
Sure.
No, I'm not sure. Not sure. Not sure at all. You have to think about it, not just say, oh, it's an offense. No, you have to think yourself in the place of these devotees and understand that they were just cooking and just doing so many arties, and they didn't have anyone to do it, and they just like came overworked, and they said, shoo, so much work, our backs are cracking, like that. And it was true, they had to struggle so much. But still, over time we could see that actually, although they had to struggle, although sometimes they diminished the standard a bit due to circumstances, we actually saw that it was the deities that kept everything together. It was really the deities, like those devotees, that handful of devotees that kept on serving the deities. They were the backbone they were really the backbone of everything. And from there, things started to develop again, you know, after a time. So like that, it is not always easy. And sometimes we think that serving deities is very difficult in this day and age, and maybe we shouldn't. But we should. We should. We should not be afraid. We should not be afraid. Because the deities will make a change. When the Panchatattva was installed in Mayapur, then so many questions came up, you know, to various doors. What will happen now? What will be the changes? Well, I mean, we cannot see what the Lord is doing in His own mystic way. That's beyond our vision. But what we can see on the surface is that it creates an incredible hub, an incredible presence, that everyone is drawn to these deities. And now, shortly after that, the big temple had to come up. Sure, now we sit there in our kirtan melas, more and more we are drawn to the deity. So, in this way, it just really takes Mayapur forward. So, deities, although deity worship is not our primary process, still, deities remain very important in spiritual life. Because that service is very direct. When we are out preaching, we are struggling with the material energy to present Krishna, and it's not so easy because there is a lot of Maya around us, and sometimes we also get influenced. So to just serve the deity is what can save us. Just like I have a story of a pujari who was serving in Mayapur, Radha Madhav, in the early days. And that pujari, he was married, had some children also. And one day he went to an astrologer, and the astrologer said that, within the next 3 months, you will leave your family and start a new family. So, you know, it was a bit shocking. And out of the blue. And then nothing happened. Nothing. Anyway, he didn't go to that astrologer also, but 6 months later he just walked past the place of that astrologer and he thought, let me tell him that. So he went there and said, like, well, that prediction of yours, you know, I mean, it didn't come true. Oh, said the astrologer, let me do a prasna. A prasna means a question. I mean, in astrology there is a technique by which you can ask a particular question and then you can get the answer. So he asked that question and did the calculations and then got the answer. And the answer, he said that the answer he got was that the deity you are worshipping has interfered. And that's why I say, yeah, well, sure, I could have set that over. But anyway, what happened then is, he didn't think too much of it. But then, some few months later, someone made him a business proposal. And for that he had to stay in Calcutta. And he did. He stayed in Calcutta. And then within a short time after, it did happen, because he stopped worshipping that deity and moved to Calcutta, stopped worshipping the deity, and then it happened. So, of course, I don't want to speak about, you know, that devotee's personal life and put it before everyone to put him to shame, you know what I mean, and things, whatever happens, happens, that's not the issue. The only reason why I'm telling the story is because it just really shows how the Lord did interfere. It's totally clear that the Lord actually interfered. And if we think about things like that, then that's going on in our life also. You know, just by worshipping those deities, the Lord interferes in our life. And so many things we don't see. We may think we are big, powerful yogis. Srila Prabhupada in one lecture is describing about Ajamil, and he's saying Ajamil was a qualified brahmana. And Ajamil, he fell down. He said, what is our chance in this age? He said, but we have the special protection of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya interferes again and again. It's like if he wouldn't like shield us from Maya, we would be finished you know, 1,000 times over. It's by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya that we survive as devotees. So there is a lot of that invisible intervention in our life of Krishna. We're not alone. Arjuna, on the battle, in the battle of Kurukshetra, he was fighting, and you know, it was like quite a fight, and of course Krishna was helping him like anything. Then at the end of the battle you have the situation where Krishna says to Arjuna, get down from the chariot and take your bow and take your arrows. Arjuna gets down from the chariot. Next moment the chariot catches fire and his amazing chariot just starts to burn up. So he's just like totally shocked. Totally, my chair, my car, you know, my chair. You know how a man feels in such a situation, you know. It's like very serious. So Arjuna was feeling extremely shocked. And Krishna explained, and Krishna then said, yes. Arjuna said, how is it possible? How is it possible this chariot has survived the battle, and the most powerful astras were fired at it and could not destroy it? And Krishna said, yes, could these powerful astras could not destroy the chariot because all this time I was protecting it. I was protecting it, therefore it couldn't happen. I was just shielding it. So but now the battle is over, so now I'm withdrawing that special protection, and now all these weapons take their effect. And that is why the chariot is burning to ashes. So, again, Krishna showed how all along he was shielding, protecting Arjuna, invisibly so. So this is very amazing. We don't realize, you know, how much mercy there is. We think the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, yeah, is that he gives the holy name, and if you chant the holy name, then well, you know, then you can get love of God. You know, that's what it is. No, but there is a lot more. There is all this invisible mercy where Lord Chaitanya is helping us every step of the way and is making arrangements in our life. And it's not happening by chance. So many things come our way, and all by divine arrangement, divine plan. So in this way, it's very interesting to contemplate on the Supreme Lord as an active agent in our life, doing all that. The divine intervention is a powerful element. I have my model of ISKCON, of a spiritual institution, which says on the surface, there is an organization. It's a sign out there, you know, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Does it say that? No. Yeah. And then Founder Acharya, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, his divine Krishna, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Like that. So that is there, and that is on the surface. There is the organization. But organizations are such a thing, you know, that like too much organization is sometimes a little difficult to tolerate. Not enough organization can also be a headache. And it's difficult to get it just right. Yeah, it's difficult. It tends to either go one way or the other. Too much or too little. And both is a little bit difficult. So therefore, living in organizations, you have to at times invoke the mantra, Trinarapi suni se na karurapi sahishnuna vani na 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 ketanya sadahari. One must be more tolerant than the blade of the tree, and more humble than the blade of grass, and all these things. Yes, that's a fact. And then there is the mercy in the form of the process of the Maha Mantra, of a sadhana that we can follow. Abhyasi yogi yuktena chitasana yagamina paramam purusham diyam yati parchin sintya. It says in Bhagavad Gita, just regular practice. Abhyasi. Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami gives us a whole description of that practice, outlines sadhana bhakti, devotional service in practice. Fine, you know, and he points out that we must engage the senses in the service of the Lord. And by engaging the senses in the service of the Lord, our consciousness becomes engaged in the service of the Lord. So, more than trying to fix the mind, you know, like going to be Krishna conscious, okay, consciousness seems is something to do with the mind. So, I must fix my mind. And why can't I fix my mind? Punish myself. It's like in the Middle Ages, the cord of the gown was taken and slash on the back, on one's own back, as a punishment for one's failure in spiritual life. We don't hit ourselves with the cord because in our tradition we don't have such a thing. We make sure we don't give anyone the cord. But we do it mentally, right? We mentally punish ourselves for our spiritual failures, like it's like guilt is like a very it's a good thing to wallow in, you know, wallow in guilt. That goes very well together with spiritual life. But so sadhana is not meant to be like that. Sadhana is not a setup, right, where you have a very difficult process and it's sure enough you're going to fail it, and then you can feel terribly guilty about it, and there you have it, spiritual life. No. It's rather neha vikramana sisti pratyavaya vichite svapamapiyasivamasyutayate mahatobaya. It's rather every little bit that you do is to your benefit. And Prabhupada saw like that. I was yesterday was the day to finish writing an offering for the Vyasa Puja book of Srila Prabhupada, the one that's internationally published, and I was I can only do such things on the last moment, you know. So, God took me till 11:30 at night, to write the thing. So I was looking at different things. And then I looked in the Lilamrita. In the end, I didn't use that story, but it was about Purushottam. Purushottam was Prabhupada's secretary, quite an early stage of the movement. And then came up this whole thing about the moon landing. And Prabhupada said they didn't go to the moon. And that was just too much for Purushottam. He just, it cracked his face. I mean, somehow or other, when Prabhupada said they didn't go to the moon, then Purushottam's like, well, you know, this is just outrageous. I mean, really, you know? We have seen with our own eyes, and I saw it too. No, I saw. You saw it? Yeah, you're devils.
Quite as old as you, but not far behind.
Yeah, how old are you?
12.
Huh?
12.
You were 12, huh? Well, maybe. Then we know. Yeah, looks like you. Anyway, we saw it too. We saw it with our own eyes. You know how people are actually, they're walking the moon. It's very clear. So the whole world saw it. So it's like, and Prabhupada said, "No, they didn't go to the moon." So we can sympathize a little bit with Purushottam, but we can also see how it created a domino effect. That one thing created a domino effect in his consciousness, because he started to think, if the Swami says we didn't go to the moon with so much conviction and we obviously went, then he's just, you know, making up things. And if he's making up things, then how do we know he hasn't made up so many other things? And then how do we know that the whole thing is true? And like, doo, 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 doo. And his whole, his, the faith in all the things Prabhupada said, he just lost it. So in this way, Purushottam lost his faith. And, it was getting quite obvious, because although he was still Prabhupada's secretary, he stopped offering obeisances when he would come in the room. So obviously Prabhupada noted that Purushottam. And then one day Purushottam said, okay, I can't take it any longer. I can't stay any longer. I'm leaving. And I'm going to tell him that I'm leaving tonight. So he said, came up to Prabhupada and just said, like, I'm leaving tonight. Prabhupada just looked at him and said, you've been with me for so long. Can you not stay until I leave? It's just 2 days. He said, all right, I'll stay 2 days. And then Purushottam expressed that he had no faith in Prabhupada, that he didn't trust. And that he didn't trust him. So that hurt Prabhupada quite a bit. But anyway, then Purushottam had to go, but he didn't have the money to go. So Prabhupada had no problem with that. He said, not so much faith. So Prabhupada just said, yes, no problem. You take the train and, like, you know, and so, and if you want, you know, you can pay it back to me sometime. And Purushottam paid it back later. And, but then Purushottam writes, he could see that Prabhupada had a very loving way, a very loving way to look upon the world. That is there. So, uh, There is so much that we don't notice, that we don't see. We don't see the loving way the Lord is looking upon us. We don't see the loving way that the Acharyas are looking upon us. Sometimes we get a glimpse of that. Right? Sometimes we get a glimpse of all this mercy that is surrounding us. And that is one of the main themes of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami said, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Daya Kora Vichara Karita Chitta Pavachamaka. That if you are indeed interested in logic, then apply that logic to understanding the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the more you will, the more you will experience great amazement in your heart. So that is what we have to explore. See, it's not. We have to understand that we fully depend on Lord Chaitanya. On Ram Navami this year, besides telling stories about Lord Ramachandra and so on, and I focused on the point that it's impossible for us. It's just impossible for us to follow the example of Lord Ramachandra, because we just don't have so much dharma in our nature. It is sort of like dharma, of course, but then like, no, we're into dharma, but when it's not practical, or when it's not, you know, then it just doesn't make sense. And we go like that. Then why would you follow it? Then you shouldn't follow it. If it doesn't make sense, you follow it as long as it makes sense. But if it doesn't make sense, why would you follow it? It's got to make sense, is it? Is it or is it not? it's like look at me like I'm set up a big mouse trap here and ask him if he wants to bite the cheese. He played a good mouse. So what to do? It's just difficult. It's just very hard to live a whole life duty, 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 dharma, dharma, dharma. We have it. That's not our strength. You know, if this is like hard. So then you have Krishna. Sarvadharmam parichaya mamikam saranam praj. Don't worry about all the dharma. Just surrender unto me. Right? That's basically what Krishna said. So, okay, Krishna makes it easier. All that refined rules of dharma, prescribed duty, everything has to be proper. Everything proper, my God, you know what I mean? Everything proper. Can't it just be spontaneous? No. It all has to be proper. Every relationship, yes. Even if your brother is 1 year elder than you, he's your elder brother, and you have to respect him like that. Yeah, but you know, he's still your brother, and you know him very well, you know. So, you know, sometimes he's absolutely wrong, and time has proven it again and again, right? And you know it, and everybody in the family knows it. Right? And to just follow your elder brother like that, he was a freak. Yeah, it's not realistic, isn't it? See, it didn't take much to convince him, because he gave me the thumbs up. So just a little bit of manipulation from the devil, and already I got him like to the stage of ready to deviate from the path of God. Just see. The cheese was too good. The cheese was off. Anyway, the point is, yes. So Krishna says, he knows, sarva-dharmam prichayamamikam sarana. Just abandon all these varieties of dharma and just surrender unto me, that's the higher dharma. But then, you know, like, oh, you know, it's like, I mean, if there's one word, yeah, surrender. He was a break. He was like, oh God, you know, surrender. It's like, I hope they're not going to ask me. So this is also difficult. And therefore, even that doesn't work. And in the end, we come to the mercy where it all we can say is, my dear Lord Chaitanya, we are not qualified. And, you know, we can't even, you know, chant Hare Krishna properly. But anyway, you know, mumble jumble Krishna somehow or other accept whatever meager offering I make and just out of mercy just accept it, you know, somehow or other accept that. That's more realistic. That's the point where I'm going. Anyway, so that's where we are. So, looking at the mercy of the Lord. So this Chaitanya Charitamrita is revealing that mercy of the Lord to us. So we're studying that a little bit today. And we're seeing the story of Sakshi Gopal. It's not just a nice story about a deity that walked far out. It's not just, well, Krishna's Kaviraj wanted to sort of give us a little bit of background information, you know, which writers do. One of the techniques of writers is you write a bit about the location, what is there, the sights to see, and this setting the scene kind of thing. Yeah, and then you put the story there. No, this is right there on the topic, the mercy of the Lord. The Lord who is always there in various forms to give us his mercy, and here particularly the deity form. And yes, the deity is Krishna, and whatever service we do for the deity, it makes a big difference. So serving the deities is a great blessing. Like here, the deities are very small, right? I mean, they are. Yeah. But then in Vrindavan, Radha Raman are also very small. And what they've done is they take advantage of that, you know. So he has a dining room. Instead of getting like his meals on the altar, no, they carry him to his dining room. Because he's small, so he can move him. And they put him on a chariot. Sometimes they turn the whole altar into like a big chariot with horses and so on. You can do, you know, like with small deities. And if you go to the big ones, then I've seen the big ones also on Radha Govinda on a boat, but it was sticking like, you know, halfway into the temple in Jaipur. You can do sometimes, but not all the time. Small deities, therefore, you can do many things. So, here also. And then it becomes very magic. But then you have to do it. Yeah. One day in a flower house, whole house made of flowers. This is what they do. One day on the boat, one day in the chariot, one day on the swing, so many things. All these things. And the more we do, the more we offer, the more the Lord becomes purchased by us. and when he becomes purchased, then he will do so many things for his devotee. The Lord can walk across. He can do you remember that young Brahmana was in Vrindavan and he went to Sakshi Gopal, stood in front of the Lord, and he said, "My dear Lord, my dear Lord, this elderly Brahmana had promised that he would give his daughter to me, but now he has broken his word. And in order to... that is not good. The truth must prevail. Therefore, my Lord, to save that Brahmana from this situation where he's not adhering to the truth, therefore I must ask you to come. Not that I'm asking you because I want that daughter. No, I'm asking you to save the integrity of that Brahmana, and for that sake, you please come." And then Gopal said, "But how can I go? You know, how can I walk? I'm a deity, how can I walk?" And then the young Brahmana said, "If you can talk, you can walk." In that way, in that way, the Lord then walked. So, remembering that spiritual life is indeed mystic. It's a bit of a change. You know, like when you go to India, right? Everything is mystic. It's like the river, you know. I mean, so all the rivers, so many rivers at least, holy rivers, right? They're not just rivers, come on, you know. They're holy rivers, right? It's like, and when you check it out, you know, then they come even from outside of the universe, like into the universe, from the spiritual realm and all these things. These are not just rivers, you know. I mean, you know, the river, you know, water, you know. No, it's a lot more than that. It's got a whole spiritual dimension to it. And cows, you know, where I'm from, a cow is just it eats grass, chomp, chomp, chomp. And that's kind of the concept of the cow. But then in India, all the demigods are residing in the body of the cow. So everything has that mystic dimension. Everything. It's like the dust is not just ordinary dust, you know. It's like complete in the Dhams, it's spiritual, it's transcendental. So like India has this whole mystic dimension. Because the Vedas reveal this mystic dimension, and gradually, by penetrating into these scriptures, we can also begin to see the mystic dimension. But it takes a little time because we have been so long in the ordinary mundane dimension that it's like the tendency is to just unravel the myth, you know, and bring it down to kind of, yeah, just ordinary, banal, mundane reality. But actually, the truth is, everything is mystic. It's all mystic. And that we see through the writings of Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. So any questions? Any comments?
Mentioning that Lord Nityananda was narrating this pastime. So is it mentioned then when this actually occurred? Because it was obviously previous to the time of Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. Is it mentioned anywhere when it actually occurred?
When it occurred? I think in one of these purports it's mentioned that it's like some 500 years earlier or so, yeah, from what I remember. Nityananda, of course, also went on a pilgrimage, because we remember that Nityananda was when he was a young boy staying in
Ekachakra,
that the sannyasi came and took him away and took him on a pilgrimage. So he'd seen all these places. He was quite familiar with. So therefore, Nityananda was able to explain everything to Lord Chaitanya.
Well, that's mystical.
Other questions?
Marshall gave the story of Purushottam, and it seems like his faith had become diseased, and the toss off between his own logic and trust in a higher personality. So sometimes to trust that toss off between understanding and faith in our own logic and in a superior personality may sometimes seem to be material. And how do we solidify that trust?
Yeah, you know, so we may have some faith in Krishna consciousness. And it could even be for the wrong reasons. We may have some artificial reason, but some are other brothers here anyway. Or we may have got a few of the right reasons, but only a few. And obviously, Purushottam's faith was thin. Basically, it didn't have many roots. His faith was particularly in Prabhupada and what Prabhupada presented. And partially that was on Prabhupada's charisma as the Indian Swami, the elderly, scholarly, this, that. It was especially personal charisma on Prabhupada's personality on which he based it. Which in itself is fine, but he didn't see like that whatever Prabhupada said was rooted in the Vedas. Like Prabhupada continues, he said that he didn't have faith in me, alright, that I can accept, but how could he not believe the Vedas? Prabhupada's just like, how is this possible? Prabhupada had so much faith in the authority of the Vedas. But, you know, the point is, our faith must have many roots. So one root is, yes, we see that Prabhupada had extraordinary qualities. So we have some faith in him. Then we see that the Vedic scriptures are very systematically describing a process, and it describes realizations and so on, and we're seeing these things in advanced devotees. Some things happen for ourselves, so we get some faith. They say the land map argument, you know, when you've traveled a little bit with the map and it's good, then for the rest of the journey, which you didn't travel yet, you start to have a lot of faith in the map. And it's like, you know, if you're, or in a more modern context, if your navigation system has saved you many times, then you know you blindly do whatever the machine says. That's right, and it may send you just into the wrong area where you don't want to drive at night. For example, whatever. Gradually you must find faith in a broader way, faith in the scripture, because we see, and it's very logical, and see that is good point, faith in the deities, because we see that those who worship the deities, they become exalted. If the deity was just of stone, how is it that pujaris who really worship deities become saintly persons? If they were just statues. For example, arguments why. Prabhupada was very good at presenting Krishna consciousness with logical arguments to establish our faith. You see? Because we just have to, see, for us, Veda, you know, doesn't mean anything. Yeah? I mean, maybe for Prabhupada, the Vedas was like, you know, wow, the Vedas say it, then how can you argue with that? But for us, well, Vedas, you know, some books from ancient history. And yeah, well, so many books are there from ancient history, and you know, you just look at them, and yeah. So it's not necessarily convincing as an argument for us. We want to test it. But if you just... So we have to test the Vedas. So, and Prabhupada therefore gave Vedic knowledge, but also logic. Logical arguments. So then you can gradually develop faith. I said, yes. I mean, the Vedic culture has many good principles. For example, when your enemy comes to your house, you must treat him in such a way as a dearmost guest. Doesn't matter, he's your enemy. He comes to your house and you treat him like he's your dearmost guest. It's like quite something, you know, in fact, you do that. But if you do it, your enemy will be shocked. You can just imagine, you know, here he comes. He's just shocked, you know. He might even stop being your enemy. He might even, after that, he might just even like, you know, it may be a whole new start, you know what I mean, from that time. So it's actually an injunction for how to overcome animosity with people. Not easy to follow, but daily culture was like that, you know, and people were kind of living by that. So anyway, by hearing something like that, one can get some faith that the Vedic literature indeed is of a very high, noble character. So, okay, if we find many such examples, then we start to have real faith in the scriptures and say, well, it's filled with deep, noble knowledge. It makes sense. So you have to go through scriptures and for yourself see that it really is of a very exalted character. And that exercise you have to go through. Otherwise, how can you accept the Vedas? So Purushottam hadn't done that. Therefore, he had no faith in the Veda. And nor in so many other things. And therefore, Purushottam left. So a broad basis of faith is what we need. Anyone else?
If you have material desires, does that mean you don't have faith?
If you have material desires, does it mean you don't have faith? It means, yes, in a sense that we don't have full faith, because it is said, Anandamayi Vyasat, the living being is by nature pleasure seeking. And wherever we think that that pleasure will be found, that's where our faith will go. See? So faith is simply where we think that our pleasure will be. And because we are pleasure seeking by nature, then we're ready to work for that. So our faith is misdirected in that sense. Your material desire means we don't have full faith that simply serving Krishna will fully satisfy us. even although we think, yes, of course Krishna is the supreme, yes, Krishna is the topmost, devotional service to him is the ultimate, but then again we think, yes, but you know, I need some enjoyment now, and you know, so still have faith that these material desires will make us happy if we fulfill them, which is of course not true. It's the opposite. Sweet for a little while, and then suffering. Material energy. It's like that. If you say no, but something, sometimes you really enjoy in the material energy. No, you do, but it creates an attachment, which later on will lead to a lot of suffering. Because that attachment will devour your energy. So you may say that, yes, but the things are so sweet, I really like certain things. Yes. But these things themselves, they ask for nourishment. They begin to devour your energy, your time, your possessions, your intelligence, everything. Begin to devour. So then that's the nature. Even the so-called good things, right, they begin to devour us. And that's what you see. You see people, they are slaves of their possessions. And what they have to do to keep all these possessions, and they destroy themselves for it sometimes. Are we done? I think so. Great, early night. Yay! This is the proper key.